Okay, we'll start the Sutta teaching session. We were discussing Mahahattipadopama Sutta, which is the 28th Sutta in Majjhima Nikaya. So basically, Venerable Sariputta is giving this explanation. While Buddha was dwelling in Savatthi at the Jetha's Grove, Venerable Sariputta himself addressed the monks and he started explaining about the Four Noble Truths actually. He is giving a simile with respect to a footprint of an elephant, saying that the elephant's footprint is the largest one. So all the other footprints of any animal can be included within this elephant's footprint. Similarly, he mentioned main teaching of the Buddha is the Four Noble Truths, and all other teachings can be included within the Four Noble Truths. And now he get on to explain the Four Noble Truths, starting with the First Noble Truth. What is the Dukkha Ariya Satcha? Kataman Auso Dukkhang Ariya Satcha. And then he explained, give a kind of brief introduction about it in the more ordinary manner, mundane manner, telling that birth is suffering, aging is suffering, sickness is suffering, death is suffering, and then being with, say, not getting what one wants, it's suffering. Ultimately, he brief it, telling that all five clinging aggregates are suffering. Now, these five clinging aggregates is what he is now paying attention, starting with the Rupupadana Khanda. So, he is mentioning what are the five clinging aggregates, and then he starts with the form clinging aggregate. Katama Chaoso Rupupadana Khandu. And there he mentioned the four elements, Chattaricha Mahabhutani, Chatunnancha Mahabhutanang Upadaya Rupa. So, and then he is asking what are the Mahabhuta, the four great elements. And there he answers telling Patavidhatu, Apodhatu, Tejodhatu, Ayodhatu. The earth element, water element, fire element, and the air element. And then he starts with the Patavidhatu, the first one, Katama Chaoso Patavidhatu, what is the earth element. And now he is going to explain about the Patavidhatu. He then starts explaining it, telling that it is also two formed, that is either internal or external. Then he is asking what is internal. And internal earth element he is explaining with respect to the body parts, which are more kind of solid, which are more solidified. And not only that, those are the ones we get grasping and we get clung to. And those start with head hairs, body hairs, nails, teeth, etc. So altogether now here 19 body parts are mentioned, but it is not limited to that. And ultimately he summarized telling whatever solidified parts available in the body, those are actually related to this Patavidhatu, internal Patavidhatu, internal earth element. And ultimately he gave a conclusion telling whatever this internal earth element and the external earth element are merely earth element. So this is very much like now the boundaries are taken out and the yogi is capable of recognizing all the characteristics of the earth element. As a result of that, his understanding is not limited to internal earth elements. He can inferentially understand the characteristics available in the outside, so that there is no internal external difference. Now he sees everywhere earth element is merely earth element. Now when he is capable of doing that, his dispassion grows, because there is no any kind of a particular special attachment to any internal or external object as such, because everywhere he finds merely earth element. And so he emphasized telling netam mama neso hamasmi na meso attati. Now he is not looking any of the earth element created or earth element part as me, myself, or belonging to me. This is not mine, this is not myself. So basically a kind of a disclaiming process happens. So it's not attaching to anything, not grasping anything, not claiming anything as mine, myself, or I am. Now, as a result of that, the mind becomes more and more dispassionate, and disenchantment grows, and ultimately mind becomes released. And so that is how it is explained. And ultimately now he is taking our attention to the external earth element, telling it is quite transient, and it also get into kind of a destruction. The earth element also getting disturbed when the water element is very much like submerging the whole thing. The earth element vanishes in such case. And even this earth element, which is mighty earth element, is like that, is subject to destruction, then there is no point of considering this limited little internal earth element as me, myself. And on the other hand, then he is paying our attention to a certain scenario where someone is scolding, someone is blaming, abusing. So how one can manage such situation by the wisdom that one has grown through this practice. So here we are talking about the elements meditation, the Dhatu Manasikara. So how that understanding can be used during a situation where we are subjected to some sort of an abuse. So there he is mentioning this painful feeling born of ear contact has arisen in me. So the painful feeling has come because of this ear contact has happened. So this is also a kind of dependently happened process. It's not independent. So it's dependent on contact. So this contact also impermanent, feeling is also impermanent, perception also impermanent, formations are also impermanent, and the consciousness also impermanent. So then when he understands that, he is able to again calm down himself and have a kind of a resolution that I am not going to have any kind of disagreeable thoughts, any angry thoughts in my mind. And he is basically calming down himself and keeping the mind unattached. And another scenario he is explaining, when someone is attacking, maybe using fists, using clods, using sticks, knives, etc., physically attack. So how one can use elements meditation, the knowledge what we have gathered through element meditation on such situation. There also he mentioned, rather than looking at the outside, so how one can look at the body. This body is quite vulnerable, so it is subjected to this sort of a situation. It is capable of, or it is vulnerable to this external disturbances. So it's a kind of a situation of the body. And on the other hand, he is asking to recollect the Buddha simile on that, the simile of the soul, where Buddha has given this kakachupama ovada, to have a very thorough understanding about the situation and not allowing the mind to get into anger, recognizing or remembering the Buddha's advice. So the Buddha's advice is talking about a very extreme case where bandits are cutting the person limb by limb and using a two-handled saw. Even in such case, if one is hating that person, angry with that person, then Buddha is saying, okay, you are not the one who is carrying out my teaching. It's a kind of an extreme case Buddha is pointing out. So given that, so he is basically asking us to restrain our mind without getting to anger. Now Venerable Sariputta pointing out that also, and there also he mentioned, okay, you have to establish mindfulness, you have to arouse energy, and you are trying to maintain tranquility, untroubled mind, concentrated mind. And so that I am going to accomplish what Buddha has asked me to do. So such a resolution is there. So he is trying to emphasize here. And then actually he is talking about another situation. So when one is continuing one's practice, one reaches to a state where there is no attachment at all. So all the elements are very much like disappeared in the mind, washed out in the mind. So no images are now appearing with respect to four elements. That means, hey, your car, your house, your daughter, brother, father, mother, wife, husband. So any of the whatever solid objects what you have considered are not disturbing your mind now anymore. So mind has become fairly spacious, unattached, fairly cleansed, fairly clean, clear. And you are now trying to maintain such equanimous state. So now that equanimous state is something that you have to develop, maintain. And while you are doing that, assume that your mind again go and attach with something. There are here, actually, the Venerable Sariputta is pointing out a situation when such kind of an attached state happen. Are you able to revert back to the unattached, wholesome, equanimous state quickly simply by recollecting the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha? So if you are able to simply recollect Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, you should be able to revert back to that unattached, unagitated, relaxed, equanimous state. If it is not happening, then it is a loss for me. So that's how he is pointing it out. So a monk, a practitioner who is more concerned about this, maintaining such a unattached state, who is trying to maintain such an unattached state, in case he is unable to establish mindfulness there, so he is considering it as a loss. It's not a gain for me. It's bad for me. It's not good for me. Because when I am recollecting the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, my mind should revert back to that equanimous state. So this is a kind of a moral shame that or moral dread that he is trying to arouse, so that he is able to maintain his mind unattached, equanimous, and not established at any particular sense object. So basically a released mind. And there he is giving a beautiful simile, a simile of a daughter-in-law. When she see the father-in-law, that immediately she establish mindfulness, she arouse sense of urgency and establish her manners and calm down herself, restrain herself, because father-in-law may be the most say decent person, or the householder, the chief of the family. So now this daughter-in-law, she being the newcomer to the family, is quite respectful for this father-in-law, little bit having certain moral fear and dread to this father-in-law. So whenever she see him, so she behaves well. So similarly, Buddha say, the monk, the practitioner, whenever recollecting the Buddha Dhamma Sangha, he should arouse this sort of an urgency, he should arouse this sort of a moral shame and dread, and quickly establish oneself in that unattached, equanimous, relaxed state. Now we can get on to the what element, and katama cha uso abodhatu. So what is this what element? The what element also internal and external. This also we can categorize into internal what element, external what element. Then he is going to explain what is internal what element. Whatever internally belonging to oneself, water, watery, clung to. So these are bile, phlegm, pus, blood, sweat, fat, tears, grease, spittle, snot, oil of the joints, urine, or whatever else internally belonging to oneself is water, watery, and clung to. This is called the internal water element. These things are easy to understand, so we all know these are certain body parts, but they are having the nature of fluidity. They are of flowing nature. They are watery. And whatever watery parts available in the body, those comes under the internal water element. And as before, he then do a kind of a practice, basically. Now this practice is it will take time. It is not immediately that he may be able to completely remove all the boundaries of internal external. But when he is practicing this elements meditation for a while, then only as a result of that you may be able to abandon all these demarcations, all these different distinctions, internal, external, good, bad, me, not me. All those demarcations will be eliminated as you continue the elements meditation. This is actually the understanding of non-self in oneself. So basically, there is no self, but we assume a self. We are the ones actually imposed certain boundaries. We are the ones who have imposed certain limitations. Telling, okay, this is internal part, this is external part. And we might give more emphasis to internal part. We may ignore the external part. But when one is practicing elements meditation, so he's understanding the elements characteristics more deeply, and not only to these body parts, he may go even beyond that. As we already discussed, say for earth element, we can recognize hardness, smoothness, roughness, smoothness, heaviness, lightness. So these are the very subtle characteristics of earth element. And with respect to water element, probably one can understand the fluidity and the cohesion. So those are the two main characteristics of water element. And the tejo dhatu, the temperature that is hot and cold, these are the characteristics of fire element. And then the air element, some sort of a vibration, movement, and bloating side of thing, what we call rising, falling. So all that comes under the characteristics of air element. So now you are understanding those characteristics, and you can't say those characteristics are belonging to any person. So they are sort of processes, they are activities. And so those activities are actually not only limited to internal, they are externally also available. So as one is continuing one's elements meditation, slowly, so our boundaries are removed. So you may start generalizing, okay, this earth element is available internally, earth element is available externally. Similarly, water element available internally, water element available externally. But they are merely water element. And so you are basically understanding both the internal water element and the external water element are simply water element. Yacheva kopana ajjattika apodhatu, yache bahira patavida apodhatu, apodhatu revesa. So now as a result of such general understanding, generalized understanding, so you can further emphasize tang netam mama neso hamasmi na meso attati, eva metang yataha bhutang sammapanyaya dattabbam. And now you are emphasizing, okay, it is not mine, it is, I am not, this is not myself. Either internal, external, now you are basically disclaiming everything. It is not mine, this I am not, this is not myself. Now the dispassion arise, wisdom arise, disenchantment arise. ఏమేతం యథాభూతం సమ్మపన్యా దిస్వా ఆపో ధాతుయా నిబ్బిందతి ఆపో దహయ ధాతుయా చిత్తం విరాజయతి. నౌ వాటర్ ఎలిమెంట్ రిలేటెడ్ పార్ట్స్ ఆర్ నౌ నాట్ డిస్టర్బింగ్ ద మైండ్. సే ఫర్ ఎగ్జాంపుల్ యు ఆర్ ఇన్ అ రియలీ థర్స్టీ టైమ్, సో యు ఆర్ ఇమాజినింగ్ అబౌట్ మేబీ అ సాఫ్ట్ డ్రింక్, యు ఆర్ ఇమాజినింగ్ అబౌట్ వాటర్, యు ఆర్ ఇన్ అటర్ డెస్పరేట్ సిట్యుయేషన్ ఆఫ్ థర్స్ట్. So many images may be coming to your mind, maybe a fruit juice, maybe a whatever soft drink. So related to such things might appear in your mind because you are more in need of that. And if you are sometimes greedy of some sort of a juice type of thing, then still such images may disturb the mind. So your mind being occupied, whatever these watery images. So earth element also similar. Other elements are also similar. So different objects are there which are comprising of these elements. Those are physically, we have given various names, and those objects are again and again coming to the mind and disturbing. And you can see, once we simply close our eyes, what are the physical objects appear in our mind. So those may be some solid objects. Those may be kind of mixture of different things, watery things. Suppose that you have gone to see a waterfall. It's so beautiful, fantastic. And you even take a photo of that. So again and again, those pictures might come into your mind. Say you are simply seeing a flowing water, or maybe a river. So beautiful, very calm. So those images might again and again come into your mind. So likewise, so all whatever the elements, whatever the objects, physical objects which are clung to, actually again and again can occupy the mind. So as one develops this elements meditation, all that has to be slowly disappeared. All that has to be basically erased from the mind. They become blurred. And the emphasis that you have given, whatever the importance that we have attributed, has to become less and less. So the mind become more and more relaxed, more and more cleansed, and the mind's unattached nature now increases. It becomes more spacious. It is not occupied with anything. So it is very, very clean now. So similarly, here water element is not disturbing the mind now, and basically mind is released from the water element. And further, Venerable Sariputta emphasize the impermanence of the external water element. Actually, the external water element is very massive, really large. Say if we consider the oceans, rivers, etc., so vast, a huge amount of water is there. And there, now he is talking about two scenarios. One scenario is when this water element become more disturbed. So the kind of a tsunami can happen, a flooding can happen. So in such case, all the villages, towns, cities, districts, countries, all become very much like submerged. So those are carried away by this flood, this tsunami. So this is how this water element become more disturbed. And on the other hand, there is a situation that water element become more and more minimum. So it's even though right now there is a vast amount, there is a situation according to Venerable Sariputta during the destruction of this world system. So the water become less and less. It becomes evaporated, now less water in the rivers, now further it evaporates. No water in the rivers, no water in the wells. Now less water in the ocean, and as further it continues, no water even in the ocean. And he says there comes a time when the waters in the great ocean are not enough to wet even the joint of a finger. You know what a kind of amount of water available currently in the great oceans, but according to Venerable Sariputta, there is a time that the water available in the great ocean is not even enough to wet the joint of a finger. Such a little amount even not available now. So likewise, he is emphasizing this external water element, even though it is so great, is seen to be impermanent, subject to destruction, disappearance and change. What of this body which is clung to by craving and last only for a while? So basically he is very much like telling us, so this vast external water element is also so vulnerable, it is also subject to impermanence, destruction, disappearance. Then no point of you grasping any kind of internal water element. It is so trivial, it is so very little. And the same information that he mentioned with respect to earth element, he repeats here as well. So that is a situation he is repeating, that when someone is abusing you, someone is blaming or scolding you, so how you are using this understanding of elements to abandon that anger, resentment, and keep the mind more relaxed. The same thing actually he repeats, telling that painful feelings are arisen in myself because of the ear contact. Now he understand the dependent nature of this whole thing. And as a result of that, he is emphasizing this contact also impermanent, feeling also impermanent, perception also impermanent, formations are also impermanent, consciousness also impermanent. Now, when one is thinking like that, so his mind, for not subject to anger or resentment, is able to establish mindfulness, calm down himself. And talking of the next situation is where you are physically abused, physically attacked. And there also he is pointing out, okay, this body is so vulnerable, it's a kind of a weak body we have. So any fists, any clods, any sticks can easily disturb this body. This body is so weak, so feeble. It's a characteristic of this body. So rather than pointing out someone else's fault, now he is trying to bring our attention back to the body so that we understand the vulnerability of the body, weakness of the body. And further he emphasized the Buddha simile, that the advice of the simile of the saw, what Buddha has mentioned about when someone is cutting limb by limb using the two-handled saw. Even that can be used to abandon the anger in one's mind. Now all that actually help us to calm down ourselves, to establish patience in ourselves, to avoid any kind of personal conflicts. But the ground level understanding is based on the elements meditation. Because the elements meditation has shown you there is no person here, there is no being here. What we are clung to as internal are also similar to external. There is no boundary. So we are the ones who have established these kinds of demarcations, limits. But in real sense, those are not available. And as a result of that, the tireless energy is aroused in oneself. And unremitting mindfulness is established. Now he is more determined to continue his practice rather than get into conflicts, rather than get into any arguments or any fights. So like that, so basically what Venerable Sariputta is trying to is to establish ourselves in more a thorough equanimity, which is based on wisdom. Now that wisdom is something that we have to continue in our mind. So even when you are developing the understanding about water element, now water-related images or water-related any kind of a thoughts, disturbances may not have to come to your mind. And similarly, we discuss about the earth element. So when we have thorough understanding about the earth element, so earth element-related any disturbance should not come to the mind. So mind has to be freed from that. So you can remember that probably we have already discussed. So there is a state of mind that Buddha discussed or explained where earth element, water element, fire element, air element does not find footing. Patavi apo tejo vayo nagadati. Yassa pataving apo tejo vayo nagadati. Nagadati. So there is no footing for those elements, and that place is nothing but it's in the mind basically. So you are developing certain wisdom in the mind. So as a result of that, when the mind is well fortified or well strengthened with that wisdom, so this Patavyapo Tejo Vayo, the earth, water, fire and air, so those constructed objects do not find any footing in the mind, because there's a wisdom available in the mind. So the attachment is abandoned, craving is abandoned, wisdom is growing. In such case, those elements are not finding any footing in the mind. Vinyanang anidassanang anantan sabbuto pabang yatta apocha patavi tejo vayo nagadhati. So that elements are not find any footing in that state. So Venerable Sariputta is highlighting that here. So when you are trying to maintain that state, that wholesome equanimous state, upekkha kusala nissita, so this is the equanimous state which is wholesome. And when you are trying to maintain that state, there may be situations that your mind again get distracted, you again get clung to, again get into any sort of a grasping. So on such grasp state, when such grasping state is there, are you able to quickly revert back to that equanimous state merely by reflecting about the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha? So how quickly you can do this? So this is how he is pointing it out. So giving the same simile, like a daughter-in-law, by seeing her father-in-law, how she quickly arouses sense of urgency, how she quickly arouses the wholesome moral dread and moral fear or moral shame, and quickly calm down herself, more restrain herself. So similarly, are you able to reflect about the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha and quickly revert ourselves back to that equanimity, rather than allowing the mind to get passionate or go through some lust, hatred, delusion, entanglement? So rather than allowing the mind to go in such case, are we able to have that detached state, continue that detached state? So that is what basically Venerable Sariputta is pointing out. So if such is possible, so whenever you reflect Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, that you are able to re-establish yourself in that equanimous state, that's a good state for you, that's a blessing for you. If it is not happening, then Venerable Sariputta is telling, okay, it is bad for me, it is not a gain for me, it is a loss for me, it is not good for me. Because when I reflect Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, the wholesome equanimity didn't establish in the mind. Rather, it continued to be attached. It continued to in that grasping state. So the emphasis is here to establish this moral shame and moral dread, so that it can be used to revert ourselves back to that equanimity. Same thing actually Buddha also mentioned in the Indriya Bhavana Sutta. In a different way, he is saying that when one is fairly practicing, he is able to revert back to equanimity by arousing moral shame and moral dread. Attiyati harayati jiguchati. So he feels ashamed of what is happening now. He is not approving it. Because he understood, okay, this is the place I have to keep my mind. That is the unattached state. Because I have seen the true nature of this, say we are limiting ourselves to this form aggregate. So we have seen that form aggregate is impermanent, it is disturbing, it is going through some destruction. So no point of attaching to it. Even though I have seen it, this foolish mind go and again attach with such physical object. Is thinking about that physical object. So these physical objects are coming again to the mind and disturbing the mind. So it's a shame for me. So basically, by arousing the moral shame, Buddha is asking us to revert back to that etam santang etam panitang edang upekkha. So that equanimity is more sublime, that equanimity is more calm, peaceful. So you should be there. You should keep your mind there rather than allowing it to some sort of an attached state. So this is what Venerable Sariputta also highlights here. So by reflecting about the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, is your mind revert back to that equanimity? If it is reverting back, then it is a blessing for you. Then you can be happy. Okay, I have moral shame, I have moral dread. Quickly, in case my mind get attached, I can quickly remember Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, so that mind reverts back to the calmness, peacefulness, equanimity. And we can get on to the fire element also. So what is the fire element? Kathama chaoso tejo dhatu. Tejo dhatu also two formed. That is the fire element, internal fire element and external fire element. What is the internal fire element? So whatever internally belonging to oneself is fire, fiery and clung to. That is what which is called warmed, ages and is consumed, and that by which what is eaten, drunk, consumed. So basically there are four types particularly emphasized here. Santappati. So Santappati is Tejo Dhatu. That means that in the body there is some sort of a warm happen. That's body temperature being maintained. For that, that's this Santappati type of Tejo Dhatu. And then the body is continuously going through some aging process. And so this aging process is because of the Tejo Dhatu. This also there is a presence of fire element. And then paridaihati, that means that this body is going through some sort of a burning, consuming sort of a process, and that is also because of the fire element. And on the other hand, when we eat, drink anything that is being digested because of the Tejo Dhatu. So that is also, now there are also Tejo Dhatu is available, the fire element is available. And further he generalized telling, whatever else internally belonging to oneself is fire, fiery and clung to, this is also called internal fire element. Now the fire element also available operating inside the body, and similarly it is operating outside the body. External fire element is also there. And when one is continuing one's practice, as we already discussed, so fire become more general. Either you feel hot, either you feel more heat internally or externally, because the merely heat element or fire element. We can't put a boundary there. We can't draw a line telling, okay, this is internal, this is external. Because more and more now you understand it's a kind of a general case, general situation. It's a function of the fire element. Either internal, either external, they are merely fire element. Yacheva kopana ajjattika tejo dhatu, yache bahira tejo dhatu revesa. So more and more you understand this common nature, the grasping become less and less. You are not giving any importance to any internal or external fire element because you know they are quite vulnerable. This is not mine, this I am not, this is not myself. Now you are disclaiming the whole thing, giving the way or paving the way to detachment. You are not grasping anything. You are promoting the non-grasping state of mind. You are not trying to possess anything. You are not saying anything belong to me. Or anything is myself. You are doing a disclaiming process. So ultimately mind gets released. And now the mind is free from fire element. And the fire related images are not appearing in the mind. Now here also Venerable Sariputta emphasize, there is a situation where the external fire element become disturbed. Now we already discussed how the water element get disturbed. Similarly, fire element also get disturbed. When that happens, it burns up. It burns up the villages, towns, cities, districts, countries, etc. Because the fire element becomes so massive, it burns everything. On the other hand, there is a situation that you can't find fire anywhere. So he is simply saying, it goes out due to lack of fuel only when it comes to green grass or to rod or to a rock or to a water or to fair open space. There comes a time when they seek to make fire even with a cock's feather or a hide paring. You can't find fire anywhere. Now there are old traditions where they are trying to continue the fire because it's difficult to find fire in case it's completely get extinguished. So they were using two sticks and they are rubbing each other to generate fire because, you know, in today we have very easy mechanisms to generate fire. Maybe a matchbox, maybe a lighter, this and that, various possibilities are there. But there may be a possibility that you have nothing. and you are using even a little feather to find out fire, generate fire, still it is not available. So likewise, this fire, about the fire element also, he is emphasizing, it is also impermanent. It is also subject to destruction. It is also going through a disappearance and change. So then what is the point of attaching to this very limited, trivial, internal fire element? So there are further and further emphasis is to detachment, dispassion, disenchantment. So the mind becomes free. And the same similes and emphasis he repeats, talking about the how a situation where you are go through some verbal abuse, on such case how you are using your understanding to abandon anger, and how you are used when you are subject to any kind of a physical abuse, how you are able to abandon that any anger by using this understanding. And further how you are trying to maintain your mind in the equanimity without allowing the mind to get attached. So as we continue the elements meditation, more and more the non-self characteristics, impermanent unsatisfactoriness, those characteristics, universal characteristics become more developed. As a result of that, mind is not attaching to anything. Now you are able to keep the mind free, released. But are you able to maintain that for a longer time? Whenever you get attached to something, merely by reflecting Buddha Dhamma Sangha, are you able to revert back to that equanimity? So here also, Venerable Sariputta emphasized the same thing. Okay, you got to keep your mind unattached in case it get drifted. So if you are reflecting Buddha Dhamma Sangha, it should revert back. If not, it is a loss for you. It is bad for you. But if it is reverting back and establish or re-establish yourself in this equanimity, then it is good for you. Okay, we have completed the three elements now. Only a few more things are there. So we'll try to continue that next week. And with that, I'd like to conclude today's Sutta teaching session. Now I'd like to open the session for questions.
Thank you, Pante.
Yeah, so we have a question from our side.
No, you can open the door.
Yes, please.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante, for your teaching.
There is someone.
Yeah.
I was wondering, I've heard one other teacher mentioning that, Anālaya Bhikkhu mentioning that the simile of the saw.
Similar to saw,
Yeah, is well, you can take it literally. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're not carrying out, if you're not, if you're becoming angry, somebody's cutting you apart, then you're not carrying out the Buddha's teaching.
Mm-hmm.
But Anālaya Bhikkhu pointed out that also we could. Well, he said, really, I think he made a more strong. Statement about that teaching, saying that the Buddha was really using that situation to help us in situations that are, you know, less threatening. Like if somebody's verbally abusing you, you could bring to mind the simile of the saw to say, well, you know, if you know, ultimately, I could be that compassionate when I'm
in that
apart.
Case. Yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
So what do you think about that, or can it be used in that way?
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, that remembering the Buddha's teaching, remembering his advice.
Okay.
So this is the maximum case that Buddha is pointing out.
Yeah.
So I am not in that maximum critical state. I am still simply, you know, verbally abused. So then, so as you said, so if Buddha is talking about that maximum, more disastrous state, so I should be able to handle this state, because still this is a very trivial thing.
Yes.
So probably you can remember Venerable Punnamantaniputta. Venerable Punnamantaniputta wants to go to Sunaparanta. So in those cases, on those days, Sunaparanta, nowadays it's believed like the, you know, the Arabic area. Punnamantana Putta wants to go there to develop his meditation. And he is coming and reporting it to the Buddha. And Buddha is telling, you know, that those people are very, you know, dangerous. So they are very notorious.
Yeah.
So how are you going to stay there?
Mm-hmm.
So then Venerable Punna says, Bhante, even they verbally abuse, still I consider they are really good people.
Yeah.
Because they didn't physically abuse me. They didn't attack me using the say knife something.
Yeah.
Okay, then Punna, if they physically abuse you, if they use a knife, then he's saying, okay, they didn't attach his fist or clubs or this and that. He further says, okay.
Yeah.
Then Punna, if they attack like that, then he says, still they didn't kill me or something like that.
Yeah.
So likewise, he shows his, as you mentioned, comparatively how he is using the situation to establish some sort of a loving kindness towards those people, rather than finding fault with them, rather than find any kind of hate towards them.
Yeah.
So he is becoming more and more a patient, and he becomes one of the very such monk. And ultimately he visits there, he becomes an arahant, and he was able to convince those people also, and
yeah.
they also, a large amount of group of those people also, I think, become arahants or something like that.
Okay,
yeah.
Thank you, because I've heard both the stories, the one you just mentioned, I never kind of related it to the simile of the saw, which is...
So actually here, on that case, actually, he is not mentioning particularly about the simile of the saw.
Yeah.
But very much like he's using it.
Yes.
Very, very, I mean,
similar.
Similar, very similar.
Yes. And, thank you.
So, okay, those are the questions we have from our side. Jennifer, you have anything from your side?
Still nothing yet on our side, Bhante.
Okay. Okay,
okay,
Geshan is
there.
Looks
like we have a question from Geshan. Please go ahead. Are you able to unmute, Geshan?
Yes. Yes. I hope you can hear me.
Yes. Yes, yes.
Great. So, I really like the teaching... today's teaching, but of course the question is not pertaining to the teaching, but I just had something else that I wanted to ask as well. I hope it is okay. So would you be kind to explain a bit on the Nirodha Samapatti? And then I have a question. I think this is a recording that I saw recently, and with that I just wanted to ask few other questions as well.
Actually, I know this Delson Armstrong, so he is the one who went through this test, this laboratory test.
Yes.
And he's a very nice person, and people believe that he's an accomplished practitioner, and his teacher was Venerable Vimala Ransi, who recently passed away. Now, with respect to the traditional information coming through the suttas, so there are certain requirements are there for one to attain Nirodha Samapatti. You can't immediately attain Nirodha Samapatti. You need a fair amount of training. Training not only in the vipassana, but in the samatha as well. So both samatha and vipassana has to be in a full-fledged form to one to attain Nirodha Samapatti. Now, from the samatha point of view, one has to have 8 jhanas. Now, I am talking about the theoretical information available with the suttas in the Buddhist tradition. So, what are the prerequisites for one to have? So, with respect to samatha aspect, all 8 jhanas should be there, but not merely having 8 jhana. Now, one can have 8 jhana, but that is also not enough. You have to practice 8 jhana in more mastery level. You call jhana mastery. So you have to attain a particular jhana immediately, you should be able to. and you should be able to stay there for a determined time period, and immediately also you should be able to emerge from that. So likewise, the jhana mastery is there that you have to develop. That is one side. On the other hand, switching from various jhana, one jhana to the other jhana, also should be practiced. Now when this Mr. Delson, actually he explained very briefly that Venerable Vimalaransi was helping him to practice into different such jhanic states, very quickly jump from this to that and etc. etc. So it's a kind of, you are very much like training the mind to various states, various absorptions very quickly. It is not that you take long time to absorb there, stay there long time and effortfully emerging from that. Rather, you are quickly able to attain something and quickly able to emerge from it. Then you are able to quickly jump to another thing. It is also not in an orderly manner. Now, say for example, in the beginning, one may attain first jhana, then you may get into the second, then to the third, then to the fourth, then to the fifth, that is the Akasananchayatran, then to the Vijnananchayatran. Kind of orderly development is there. But here, so when one is mastering it, it is not in a such orderly manner, but in an ad hoc manner also one should be able to practice it. Now these are, you know, extreme cases. These are not easy things. One might even take the whole lifetime to do it. It's not an easy thing. So this is a this Delson's case is a very exceptional case. So his background is actually from he has some privilege to be in the Himalayas and practice this Samatha meditation for a very higher level, to a higher degree, and even to the yogic practice he went through to a very higher degree, and therefore his Samatha practice is at a full-fledged level. And then the Vipassana, he seems that get on to Vipassana with the teaching from the Venerable Vimalaransi. So they are basically, their practice is based on Metta. So they develop metta, and then that metta state available in the mind being subject to vipassana, they look at how these whatever the thoughts, feelings available in the mind at that level, how they are subject to impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, non-self, etc. So from there they practice sort of cittanupassana, dhammanupassana, and from that the vipassana is continued. So, according to the suttas, at least one has to become an anagami, non-returner level, in order to attain the Nirodha Samapatti. Now, Nirodha Samapatti and just merely touching the Nirodha are two different things. Now, Nirodha Samapatti is where that you are able to attain there and stay there for a long time, and that is, one can say, as a Samapatti, kind of an attainment. But according to the suttas, one may quickly touching it when one is attaining the Maggapala. Say one becomes a Sotapanna, and then when he is going into the Sakadagami level, so he is continuing his practice, Vipassana practice, and there may be a momentary experience of Nirodha, and maybe he is emerging from that as a Sakadagami. Similarly, if he is getting to an Anagami, so he is continuing his practice, and there may be a momentary touching of the Nirodha, and then he is getting as an Anagami. So likewise, these are, you know, some theoretical information. So attaining Nirodha Samapatti and staying there is not an easy thing. It depends on whole amount of practice. And certain information about it, and what are the prerequisites needed, and what are the different characteristics of that, some information are available explained in the Chula Vedala Sutta. You can refer what is the difference between the death and the Nirodha Samapatti. So those are explained in the Chula Vedala Sutta. So those are the information I like to share with you, taking from the suttas.
Excellent. I think you basically answered most of the questions that I wanted to ask. So I think with that, I will rush asking the question, but I think I will definitely review and read about the Chula Vedala Sutra as well. So thank you so much. I really appreciate Theo teaching.
Okay, yeah.
Tunu Ran Saranai.
Yeah.
Ask one more question.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
So we have a question from our side, yeah.
I was wondering, did you have a chance to look into unwholesome equanimity?
Unwholesome equanimity, oh.
Yes.
No.
Okay.
I didn't get a chance to do that.
Okay.
Yeah,
you.
Yeah, yeah.
Looks like there's another question from Joseph. Hi, Joseph. Feel free to unmute.
Thank you, Jennifer. Hello, Bhante.
Hello. Yep.
Hello. Thank you for today's talk. I thought maybe I could ask you a question. I've been reading The Magic of the Mind by Bhikkhu Nyanananda.
Right.
And I've been trying to sort of understand and practice that. So, for example, today, in my sitting meditation, I found I was able to go to a very calm state, and I was trying to recognize that feeling of I am, that, you know, sense of me, like the sense of a self. And I could kind of perceive it, and I was trying to just observe it, and I could see how I could maybe for a few moments feel very much that sense of self, and then somewhat lose track of it as the mind would take on another object. And when those objects would come in, I would recognize them as signs. And from what I was understanding from the book is that all the signs coming to the mind, the only thing that they signified were not actual things, but the greed, hatred, delusion. So that was the only thing being signified. And so I'm kind of trying to apply that knowledge to the perception I was having, and that would kind of clear the mind again. The mind would kind of settle down. And then again, I would look for that sense of self, which would ultimately kind of emerge, just the feeling of I am, and I would try to look at that. And at some point, it's sort of that too, that sense of self, I tried to apply the teaching that this sense of self is a perception, and it wasn't just doing it theoretically. I felt at the time, and speaking to you, it sounds a little wordy, but at the time, I really saw it as a perception, and that there was nothing being signified. There was nothing other than the perception, than the sign, and that sign was being produced or was signifying the greed, the hatred, the delusion. And it felt very, I felt when those moments happened, a kind of a bit of a release, like a little bit of the, you know, the waves, the rapture, sort of would feel more kind of a dissolution, and very, very calm, and then not wanting to necessarily get up, not wanting to end the meditation. I could feel that a little bit, as soon as I end this meditation, this state of mind is going to vanish, and then trying to also recognize this is just a state, this is a conditioned state, it can't last. I have to go into the world and see if I can maintain this in the world. So then I, you know, consciously ended the session, got up, and then on my way to work in the bus, for example, I'm in the bus and I'm looking around, and I can see how the mind is noticing, say, people, objects, different things, and I'm in my mind meditating on that. These are signs. There's maybe no real significance, like actual significance to them, other than they are signifying, you know, greediness or hatred or some kind of self-making, some kind of conceit. And then there was a moment where I felt like all the signs kind of vanished, like my eyes were open. I was still seeing everything and everyone. Like everything was there. I was definitely, like I wasn't asleep. I was very much awake. I was in the bus. I was operating. But there were no signs in the sense, like nothing was, what can I say? All I can say is that there were no signs. Mm-hmm. And I understood that as a moment when there was no greed, hatred, or delusion. And it only lasted a few moments. And then again, you know, something sort of caught the attention, you know, a nice object. And I could see, okay, greediness has caused that sign to emerge. Mm-hmm. And that was a little easier to do because I was on my own, not talking to anybody on the bus. Right. And then when I got to work, you know, started talking with people, it all seemed like just back to regular day-to-day mode. So I just wanted to share that with you and ask for advice. If you could offer me any advice, I would greatly appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, very good. So basically, as you know, that the point here is that the signs are a product of greed, hatred, delusion. So this is explained in the Mahavedala Sutta by Venerable Sariputta telling Rago ko avso nimitta karuno, doso nimitta karuno, moho nimitta karuno. So when we have lust operating in our mind, it basically generates or it magnifies the taking up of signs. Similarly, when hatred is operating in our mind, it magnifies the taking up of signs. And when delusion is operating in our mind, so basically we are recognizing ourselves as an individual, as a person, as an important person, as me, myself, etc. So there are that delusion also signified the signs, and we start picking signs, we start merging them, attaching to them, and grasping them. All that operations are happening because the greed, hatred, delusion are the real, we can say, the culprits. Now, as you did the opposite situation, where say when mind is picking certain sign, so you are trying to figure out, so what is the exact cause? Is it because of lust? Is it because of hatred? Or is it because of delusion? Now you are applying Yoniso Manasikara actually, and as a result of that, you are not promoting the process, rather you are breaking the process, so that your mind become sort of established in wisdom. So why am I continuing this unnecessary process? Why am I allowing the mind to overwhelm by lust, hatred, delusion? So yeah, then basically it reverts back to the equanimity. It avoids this process, stops this process, and again calm down, relax itself. So I feel it's a very nice practice, Joseph. No harm, and you can continue it. So more and more, likewise, say, more we understand this subtle, underneath the defilements. So when our mind being occupied, so what are the underneath defilements which are causing it? So basically we are applying the Yoniso Manasikara. So when we understand that, when we recognize that, so we are not promoting that process anymore. We are not being deluded by that process anymore. So the process stops. Again, mind cleanse, mind become more clear, established back in the equanimity, calmness, peacefulness, so you can maintain it. So basically operating with the wisdom.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
Would you say then that, I guess the question that comes up for me, the signs are the only thing that enter the consciousness. It appears that the greed, the hatred, delusion, we don't see them directly. They're kind of, like the way I was kind of imagining it is as if all we see is like a balloon that's been inflated.
Right.
And the greed, hatred, delusion is like the air that's like pumping up the balloon.
Exactly.
But we never see the air. We just see the balloon.
Correct. Exactly.
So is it, I mean, the hope is to is to get rid of the
balloon,
greed, hatred, delusion. Right? I mean, because then that's the thing. Why does it keep popping up? Like, why does it keep popping up?
Yeah.
And I can't, it's not possible to get it directly. So there's nothing, it seems like, it is the idea that we just keep doing this practice and eventually it just peters out? Is that...
Yeah, that's right. That's right. The animitta, probably you have heard about the animitta samadhi or animitta cheto vimutti.
Signless state.
Yeah, signless state. So when we are in the signless state, so it is being very much like our mind is equipped with the understanding, equipped with the vipassana knowledge. So as a result of that, mind has stopped picking up the signs. So now we are in the signless freedom in a way. So right. So basically, as you said, so mind get trapped or mind get attached when it is taking up the signs. But as a result of our practice, particularly when we understand the impermanent nature of everything, and now things are quickly changing, we are unable to pick the signs. So not being able to pick the signs, ultimately mind get freed. So that's how the animitta cheto animitta vimokka mukha happens. So the mind get freed because it's unable to take any signs. Because signs are a must for the mind to get established. If there are no signs at all, there is no way to find a footing. So, and there's another interesting statement that Buddha is mentioning. Sanimitta bhikkave uppajjati papaka akusala dhamma no animitta. So Buddha is telling all the unwholesome states in the mind are happening lean onto some sort of a sign, attaching to some sort of a sign. No animitta. When there are no signs at all, then can't have any kind of unwholesome state. So the mind is completely freed. So therefore, now we are using our senses. I mean, our eyes, ear, nose, tongue, body, and the mind. Actually, those senses are only capable of picking certain signs. And signs are playing a huge role in our whole sensual realm. And particularly the five sense faculties are operating based on the signs. So as we continue our practice, now even though your eyes see, you stop picking those signs. Even though you hear, you stop picking and get tangled with those signs. So they are coming and going, but they do not penetrate to the mind. So likewise, signs play a huge role. And ultimately what is encouraged is to keep the mind in signless state. That's why, you know, that with respect to arahants, Buddha emphasized, sunyato animitto cha vimokko yesa gocharo. Akaseva sakuntanam padan tassa durannaya. He says, like the birds, when they are flying through the sky, you can't find any signs, you can't find any footages. So similarly, the arahant's mind, so you can't find any footing, you can't find any footages, telling, okay, these are the objects that his mind has associated. These are the objects that he has, his mind being attracted or repulsed or being attached, because his mind is simply navigating without find any footing on any objects or any signs. So that's why his mind is particularly in the signless state, animitta cheto vimukti level. So his mind is completely liberated, not picking up any signs.
Well, thank you, Bhante. And I can really appreciate, like, having listened to your talks for, you know, all this time, these challenges which are being presented in the suttas by the Buddha, which at first, you know, very difficult to even understand, even what is a sign. Like, I remember a time when I didn't even really understand what does that really mean.
Mm-hmm.
What is a sign? And then it takes quite a while. I think there's quite a bit of, like, theoretical understanding needs to come into the picture in order to really understand what to do.
Correct.
And, you know, and how what to do even. And that just takes quite a while of, like, experimenting just to try and figure it out.
Correct.
And at first, what seemed really kind of complicated and difficult to like even understand the vocabulary.
Right.
I find now it's just like really well explained. It's just really clear. It's like super excellent advice.
Exactly.
And I can really see how you know, it takes time, but now I feel that I'm starting to get a practical result after a theoretical kind of grappling with it. So I really, really appreciate it. Theravan Saranai.
Yeah, Theravan Saranai.
Okay, thank you. And Geshan, did you have a follow-up question?
Yes, Jitpa, and thank you so much. So, Bhante, this is picking back on Joseph's questions, one of the things what I was thinking of asking is this, you were talking about the emptiness and the aimlessness and signless. Are these the three doors for liberation? Is that the...
Correct. Yes.
Okay, yes. That is the only question what I thought, you know, like, so it talks about the emptiness. Is that what, how you sort of phrased it, the way, and I understand the signlessness, and the aimlessness is not very clear for me.
No, basically, starting with animitta, appanihita, and then sunyata. Now, animitta is what we are... Yeah, animitta. Okay. Animitta is the signless state, where the mind is not picking up any signs, any marks. So the mind becomes freed because no signs are available. So signs are causing the defilements. Signs are essential to have a defiled state in the mind. So when the mind is not picking up any signs, now it get liberated, it become freed based on this signless state. So that is one state. And then the appanihita is where you have no further desires, there is no any further aims, any goals, any further, say, aspirations. Utterly you become quenched at that level. So I am feeling complete contentment. I don't want to expect anything more. Say, I have no point of desiring anything more because everything is suffering. So no point of keeping my mind on any conditioned phenomena. So such kind of an understanding which is based on the dukkha, based on the unsatisfactoriness. By seeing all the conditioned phenomena are dukkha, so then no point of wishing such conditioned phenomena. So I am not wishing anything in the future. Okay, let me be contented 100% in the present moment. But having nothing, basically, expecting nothing. So this is how the appanihita vimokkhamukha is explained, where there are no pranidhi, there are no prarthana, there are no any wishes, any desires. And then the sunyata is where the emptiness, basically understanding that there is no soul, there is no self, and there is nothing belong to a self. The non-self characteristics, anatta lakkhana. So that is the emphasis into the sunyata level, because there is no self and there is nothing belong to a self. So you basically disclaim everything, and as a result of that, mind get released, mind get freed. So this is the sunyata.
Yes, so that is the order, but can it be any order? That it can come.
Rather than telling any order, probably one can say that actually we can't pre-see or foresee which characteristics become more prominent to myself. Say you are practicing your vipassana, and you can't foresee in the future what would be the main characteristics more appealing to me, more thoroughly establish myself. Is it in the anicca, is it in the dukkha, or is it in anatta? It's very difficult to foresee it. But anyway, as you continue your practice, there may be a situation that you thoroughly understand the impermanent characteristic. there may be another level that you may understand the dukkha, another level that you may understand the anatta. So, and when you are thoroughly developed, equipped with anicca, okay, the animitta can happen. When one is thoroughly into the dukkha, then this appanihita can happen. When one is into the anatta, this sunyata can happen. So, but by the way, they are very similar in the sense that, say, when the mind gets released, it is the released. So, only the path is different. The how you attain is different, but actually the, you know, the taste of freedom is very maybe the same according to the Dhamma.
Yes, very good. Thank you, Pante. Thank you once again, Thiruvan Sarnai.
Yeah, Thiruvan Sarnai.
That's the last of the questions, Pante.
Okay, then we have spent almost 1.5 hours. Then we can wind up the session. And we have spent a fair amount of time discussing the Dhamma and listening to the Dhamma, all the merits what we have accumulated. We share with all the celestial beings, all our past relatives and whoever in need of merits. And we wish these merits help us also to attain path, fruition, nibbana. We'll recite the traditional verses. Yattavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam.
Sabbe devanam mudantu sabba sampatti siddhyam yattavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe bhutanam mudantu sabba sampatti siddhyam yattavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe sattanam mudantu sabba sampatti siddhyam akasattha ca bhummattha devanaga mahiddhika Punyam tam anumoditva charam rakam tu sasunam Akasakta ca bhummatta devanaga mahiddhika Punyam tam anumoditva charam rakam tu desunam Akasakta ca bhummatta devanaga mahiddhika Punyam tam anumoditva charam rakam tu mangkaram Idam vo nyati nam vo tu sukhita huntu nyateyo Idam bho nyati nam ho tu sukhita huntu nyateyo Idam bho nyati nam ho tu sukhita huntu nyateyo Imina punyikam dhenam vame bhava sumagamo Satang sumagamo ho tu yava nibbana pattiya Imina punyikam dhenam vame bhava sumagamo Satang sumagamo ho tu yava nibbana pattiya Yamina punyakam menam mame bhava samagamo Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana patiya
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Thank you, Bhante. Thiruvan Sarnai.
Yeah, Thiruvan Sarnai.